Time now for Connecting the Diocese. Connecting the Diocese is a production of the Diocese of La Crosse. Here's host Jack Socha.
Thank you so much for joining us on Connecting the Diocese. We have had a huge drought in our area, and on gravel roads that we have, they are coated with crushed limestone. And so the limestone falls apart pretty quickly. And in this very dry weather, we have limestone dust that looks like a fog bank if you're going fast enough down one of these gravel roads. And if you leave your car outside, even for a relatively short time, and one of these limestone fog banks happens to pass over it, it coats it with a very fine white-colored dust, which happened to my car. And then we had a very, very brief rainstorm, and these drops of rain tended to kind of slide down the car, leaving little trails in the limestone. So the formerly dark car looked kind of like this limestone colored with dark streaks. It looked like some kind of camouflage from Operation Desert Storm or Afghanistan, like I had some kind of military surplus vehicle parked in my front yard. So if your car is looking that way, kind of like something from, wasn't there a TV show called The Desert Rats Commandos or something like that? This is kind of what it looks like in my neck of the woods. It could be worse. Last year, 2 years ago, I happened to park my car for an extended period of time under a large tree that was the habitat temporarily for a whole flock of migrating birds. Well, you can imagine the rest of it. Anyway, we've got some good stuff coming up. I got Chris Ruff joining us with some updates that I think you're going to find very interesting. So stick around here, right here, on Connecting the Diocese. In this particular show, you're going to be hearing a lot about connecting the diocese, literally, talking about getting the parishes to work with each other, talking about the deacon formation program, all kinds of things. And I want to remind you that if you happen to be driving in your car or just listening casually, that a lot of the information that we are talking about on this show is also available on the diocesan website at diolc.org. Yes, you're going to be hearing a lot of things that will inspire you and maybe get you wanting to get involved. And maybe we don't give a phone number out that you can call locally, but what you can do is you can go to the Diocese of La Crosse website, again, diolc.org, and look up some of the things we're talking about. Now, while you're there, take a look at the community calendar, all the things going on in the area. Find out what's happening with Catholic Life magazine. Get the most recent commentary from the bishop. Get homilies that have been recorded. All kinds of things. It's a very exciting place to go to these days. diolc.org. And if I can put in a plug for our show, you can go to diolc.org and you can listen to previous shows that have been already aired. They're downloadable. They're MP3 audio files. You can listen to them right online. You can just download them. We don't ask you for a password or your, you know, email address, or you haven't got to subscribe. You can just listen to them. The folks working in and around the diocesan headquarters are very cognizant of the fact that they are not the diocese. You are the diocese. We are the diocese. All 15,000 square miles is the diocese. And we're trying to bring it all together so we can all benefit and all share the joy. So thanks for listening. And again, stop by diolc.org. Well, I want to welcome back to the show Chris Ruff, who is the director of the Office for Ministries and Social Concerns, and guest Karen Becker. Will explain why Karen is here as well in just a minute. Welcome to you both. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Jack.
The Ministries and Social Concerns Office has been busy changing, morphing, adding on, and you've got some new developments as well. And I'm just going to turn this over to you because you know a lot more about it than I do at this point. So what's going on?
Okay, well, thanks for asking. Yes, we have a new development in the office. I am really, really happy to say that Karen Becker, who was an executive with Catholic Charities, director of marketing for Catholic Charities, and it wasn't even just that. I will say, being on the board of Catholic Charities for a long time now, I looked over and I saw Erin was the Swiss Army knife. Erin did a little bit of everything and always superbly well, and with such cheerfulness and such energy. And I thought, oh, I need somebody like Erin Becker. Anyway, so she retired from her full-time work with Catholic Charities, continues with them part-time. And I said, would you be willing to work some modest number of hours a week, 8 to 10 hours a week, assisting me to help to grow social ministry in our parishes, maybe to grow, to fertilize, to support, to encourage? And I just saw and see in Karen someone who has the kind of the contagious ability to do that. So we're in the early stages. It's going to take some time to get ingrained in all of this. But Karen has started making connections already. And I don't know, you want to say a little bit?
This was an easy yes for me, Chris, which I have a problem with. My husband says I don't know how to say no, which I'm learning. This was an easy yes for me. You know, I did work for Catholic Charities for a long time. But before I worked for Catholic Charities, I worked for the Catholic Church in a variety of roles. And I think the thing that I've learned over the last 30 years is that I grew up in a household where our family, I can remember my mother and father, we always spent time giving back to people in need, to our local church, to different organizations where it was just part of our culture growing up in that family. And I would like to think I've done the same thing with my children. And I feel very, very blessed that God sent me on a path that allowed that deep-rooted need of service towards other, and he's given me these wonderful opportunities. And I feel like as I got ready to retire, you know, as we retire, we start to think, well, I was working 40 hours a week, what am I going to do with those 40 hours? And my granddaughter lives 2 hours away, and so I can't spend 40 hours a week with her. But I did think that this was a perfect opportunity to continue to share my faith of one of the core values of our church, and it is that social ministry, that caring for our fellow man and men and women and children. And right now there's a lot of people out there who are still in need, and I see it growing. And sometimes even just a listening ear can help. But I've also, through the years, the churches I've worked with, there's a lot of individuals out there who have the same conviction and core belief that I have, who just want to help, who want to make it a better world, who want to, within the church, follow our Catholic social teaching and feed the hungry and dress, you know, help those in prison. And so I think that it was a wonderful opportunity, what, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, when we started the diocesan
social ministry committee, which has representatives from each of the 13 deaneries, and just realizing that we're a large diocese geographically. We have 21 counties. That's a huge area to cover. And how do you keep people connected? How do you share ideas with one another? And how do you have a network that's strategic, too? So, I mean, you've got the diocese, which everybody views as sort of Grand Central headquarters, whatever. Then you've got your parish at the local level, sometimes a tiny parish. In between, you've got the deanery. And so it's that mid-level structure. So at the deanery level, what could we do to try to establish a network there so that communications could come down more easily from the diocesan level through the deanery level to the parishes, and up from the parishes to the deanery level and to the diocese? So this social ministry committee has been very helpful in that, but I felt like we needed something a little bit more in the field. We needed somebody like Karen to go into the field at that more particular level and just say, hey, good to meet you. What are you doing? What do you need? Do you know what's happening with your neighboring parish? Are there things? And you could say more, Karen, about sort of that sort of thing.
Well, and I think what I'd really, if I had a perfect vision or a perfect world that I was working in, I know that there are a lot of small parishes And there are people who want to do things. There are people who want to be, there are young people. I mean, I don't know how many times I've read or heard from the local, especially the smaller parishes, there just are no, you know, the 18 to 35 year old in the Catholic Church, we're just losing them, especially after COVID. And I know we see a lot, when I worked at Catholic Charities, we'd see a lot of that age group coming in and working in our homeless shelter. And I'd hear from them that they might not be able to support or make donations or do that, but they want to give of themselves. They want to practice their faith. So I know they're out there, and I think in a perfect world, if we could get these small parishes just to realize you don't have to do the big things necessarily. If you don't feel overwhelmed. Let's start with the little stuff. Let's start, what need do you see in your community? What is a local parish doing? Maybe you don't have to reinvent anything. Maybe the neighboring parish has a food pantry. And your parish is looking for some way to practice the social concerns, that part of your faith, putting faith in action. And maybe they just host a local food drive once a month that supports this other parish's food pantry. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. So that's what I'm trying to communicate, is you don't have to think of, you have to have a big project or you have to do this grandiose thing. Let's just have a conversation about, what are the needs in your community? What would you like to do? How can we practice your faith? How can we engage the young people back into being active in our Catholic faith?
And some of the efforts could be interdenominational as well.
Absolutely.
You could have maybe the local food pantry, maybe the Presbyterians and the Lutherans, and everybody's kind of pitching in. They're putting on a meal, or they're stocking shelves or whatever. We as Catholics, that's a great opportunity for ecumenism, where we can roll up our sleeves and be part of that effort to be Christ to those in need. So yeah, I think, and it could be too that a parish maybe has a couple of people that are interested in social efforts, you know, in outreach, but they don't have maybe a committee. Well, maybe Karen can help them to think about, well, it's not that hard. Here's some things you might think about. Here's what a committee might look like. Don't be overwhelmed. Or maybe the committee is, maybe it's smaller parishes, maybe it's a couple parishes that have a joint committee. And Karen can be a help to say, here, this is how you might, you know, maybe you meet once a month.
We've all heard the term about all politics is local. Well, all social concerns are local. I was just hearing someplace that back in 1970, the first ever suicide hotline was created by a guy. He used a pseudonym, but he actually was a Catholic priest. And, you know, he didn't say, this is overwhelming, I can't do this. But isn't that interesting? And now we've got hotlines of all kinds all over. But this one Catholic priest in San Francisco said, you know, we need a suicide hotline. And he just went and did it. And so there probably are some very good ideas on the very local level. And it's not the kind of thing that you can do by just putting a blurb in a, you know, in a bulletin. So you go out there, you're going to drive around and visit. And then how are you going to stay in touch with email or Zooming, or how do you do that?
Well, we stay in touch through these deanery meeting that we have, because we have deanery reps from each, our diocesan deanery reps all come together. What do we do that four times a year?
Quarterly, pretty much quarterly, but every 3 months or so.
As an example, there are parishes with some great ideas that are doing great work, and there are some parishes that want to do great work but aren't sure how to get started. So why can't a local parish be a mentor to another parish on how they got it started? One of the things I learned by joining this group was that Melanie and Tom in, I think, Toma, they do jail ministry. And they go into the jail and they work with the gentlemen who are
incarcerated.
Thank you. Building or making rosaries.
Yeah.
And then they've come back and they've given these, they just give these rosaries. They've given them to me to take to the homeless shelters. But they'll give them to whoever wants them. But it's a great jail ministry where they're actually in with the guys. They're meeting with them. They're letting them know that they're not alone. They're praying with them. They're just there supporting them and then supporting them when they get out. And this is just one parish activity. But as we sat in the meeting, another representative from another deanery was like, I think that's a great idea. How do we get involved in doing that? Mm-hmm. And that's what I really would love to see my mission at, is I'm not going to go in and create more work for the parishes and the local priests and deacons. That is not my goal in any way, shape, or form. I'm not going to require them to have a representative from their parish. But we need to recognize that this type social concerns, this is a core, one of the core parts of our faith. We have been directed by Jesus Christ, Matthew 25, to make sure that we do take care of our fellow man, that we are there taking care of him, feeding the hungry. And so as we know our faith and practice our faith, it's important to put your faith in action and find some way to take care or to give back, because that's who we're called to be. So that's why I want to encourage people to practice that part of their faith and help them make connections with people who are already practicing their faith. Now, not everybody can do all these things, right, and that's understandable, but if you can, here's an opportunity.
And this is an incredibly generous diocese. It's an incredibly generous area, not just the Catholics here. When I try to describe this area to people who have never been here, the story I tell them, and I'll keep it very short, is that a number of years ago, a little girl, 8, 10 years old, whatever it was, needed some kind of operation that required an enormous amount of donations of blood. And this was going to happen, I think, in January. The day of the blood drive, there was a winter storm warning, not a watch, warning, you know, 8 to 10 inches of snow, that kind of thing. And I was sitting home looking at the news going, oh man, this is really bad. In the middle of that winter storm warning, so many people showed up, they had to go back to the hospital to get more collection kits. Mm-hmm. And that's the story I tell people about this area.
Recently, the group that we meet with, the amount of relief and supplies that were given to the Ukrainian efforts have just been, and that was a collaborative effort at the local parish level.
Networking all the way up and down to get that to happen. There had to be strategic planning at the high level, and then, but at the most local level, there had to be the actual collections, and it all worked together.
And then you talked about when they did the food collection, where they actually made packets of food.
Oh, the Feed My Starving Children.
Yeah, how many thousands of meal packets did they make?
I don't know, but it was thousands.
Thousands.
And this is where we have to be able to talk about these things with each other. We have to be able to share these ideas. And that's one reason, another fruit of this committee, was the creation of our parish social ministry initiatives directory.
Yes.
There, I said it all. So, because it's about learning what everybody's doing. For one thing, it's encouraging. You look through that that directory and you say, wow, look at all the... In fact, one issue of Catholic Life, it was December issue a couple years back, was just the whole issue pretty much was devoted to taking things from the directory and putting them on. And Jack Felsheim, who was editing the Catholic Life, he said, I'm just blown away to see everything that's going on. But that's what you need to do. You need to find a way to communicate these things, also in ways that can mentor others. So you'd say, and have that contact person. This is what they're doing here, and this is the person who's a contact for that. Oh, I'm going to call that person and find out, how did you do that?
Well, and the other nice thing about the initiatives directory is that it's also used at Catholic Charities. So where Catholic Charities might have local food pantries and men's and women's clothing closets and things like that, if somebody from, let's say, the Neillsville area needs assistance, well, why would we have them drive all the way to one of our offices? We can look at that initiative directory and say, hey, we see in your community that there is a clothing closet that's open on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Can you get there? Mm-hmm. So it's a resource not only for all the parishes, but for the Catholic Charities, for the, you know, for your social service agencies. Yeah. And we've discovered that we only have a limited number of resources. So why wouldn't we be communicating rather than duplicating services?
And Catholic, you know, and it works both directions. You talked about how Catholic Charities can refer people to some of the local, but the other way as well. And this is why Catholic Charities has representation on this social ministry committee as well, so that we're all in conversation. We all want to see, how can we be the heart and hands of Jesus Christ for our neighbor in need? How can we all be aware of what are the needs, what are the different resources available, who's doing what? But there has to be this networking and communication, and there has to be somebody like, I say now, somebody like Karen, who then can go out in the field and kind of help this really come to fruition at the local level, just by being a support. Hi, I'm Karen. I'm glad to meet you. I mean, just, people need to see other people and feel like I'm being encouraged. This is possible, you know.
Well, and to give you a totally mythical example, and not one that's religious, if I wanted to start a book club in my little hometown, which would be a valuable thing. I would have no idea how to begin. I mean, I wouldn't even, and I'd make mistakes, and I would probably waste a lot of time. But if somebody came to me and said, we've done a book club, and this is what you need, A, B, C, D, E, and here, I would have a much better idea of how much work was involved, how much organizing what was involved, what the issues would be involved, how you pick the books.
Exactly.
All the things I have absolutely no idea about.
Right.
And so it's the same idea with, you know, there are people who are, the spirit is willing, but the knowledge is weak, basically. You know.
Well, and if you don't feel the that you have the knowledge, you don't feel you can do it.
Exactly, exactly.
And so if you sit there and think, well, and it gives you options. So it's like, I know that my parish has a strong desire to do jail ministry, but I have no idea how to go about doing this. But on the radio show, I heard today that somebody in Toma is doing it.
Yeah.
Well, I know Melanie and Tom would happily share what they've done for it to be started in another community. And yes, those resources, being able to connect, being able to decide, being able to put actual action behind ideas.
Right, exactly. I come from a background in mostly radio promotion. They used to say to us, you could have the greatest radio show in the world, but if you don't tell anybody about it, they're not going to do it for you. Mm-hmm. And so the idea that if these different parishes could not only be aware of one of the things going on down the road or in the next town, but they could also maybe include it in their bulletin or something so that everybody would know about it. The idea that it doesn't just kind of, the word doesn't get out by itself anymore.
Right, right. There has to be some intentionality about it. There has to be some methods. One of the things I wanted to mention too is that there is a tremendous joy that people experience. Of course, just to give of themselves in love to their neighbor in need is always a source of joy. It always brings joy. When you do that with others, when you do that in a community way, whether it's the parish or it's a group of parishes working together, the joy is multiplied. It's deeper, and the fruits are stronger because, you know, you have more hands and hearts working together. So there's an opportunity here for people to give of themselves and to learn how to do it together in a strategic community way, and the joy can be just abundant from that.
Yeah, this is basically the idea of strengthening community.
There is that. I mean, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
When you have people rolling up their sleeves together to, whether it's packing food for starving children internationally, or whether it's collecting donations for the people suffering in Ukraine, or it might be for people that have just had a devastating hurricane or an earthquake like Morocco. When you have people working together, it builds that community. Absolutely.
Yeah. And this is a partial antidote for the isolation that a lot of people have been experiencing post-pandemic, and in the world of being online and only having Zoom meetings. You're dealing with real people who hand you the next thing to put together.
Absolutely. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. I think the pandemic did have that effect. There's no doubt. All the studies have shown it. And coming out of that to discover our neighbors once again is a beautiful thing.
Yeah, and discover that some of our neighbors need a bit of help and where it can be gotten.
Absolutely.
To. Absolutely. It's very interesting. And it seems like right now, I mean, just this last night they were reporting this gigantic hurricane flood in Libya, and how many thousands of people died in one fell swoop in this thing. This is right after Morocco. 10,000 people missing, and I forget how many thousand
just
dead.
Oh, my goodness.
Dead. And it's just, you know, the needs out there. Yeah, this is really something that you just can't be, what was the old song, wishing and hoping and planning? But you got to have some guidance in these things. And I'm sure Karen has had just amazing experiences over the past few years. There's very little that someone can ask her as to how do we go about doing something, or what resources do we need, that she probably can't answer, because she's pretty much seen it all.
Well, for sure. And you know, one of the things I really admire about Karen is it's a spirit that sort of a can-do spirit. She's always filled with hope and with optimism that you can do what you set out to do, and just such a good heart. It's such a beautiful thing.
This is tangential to this, but I'm sure that our friend Valentina, when she first got going on her project, A Chalice of Mercy, which then greatly expanded, she had to get some advice from people, I mean, she didn't completely just invent the whole thing whole cloth. And I'm just curious, how is she doing today? What's going on now?
She is so immersed. Valentina posts on Facebook quite a lot. Mm-hmm. She's over in Ukraine.
Wow.
Okay. She's been there now for months. And she's delivering, she's seeing to it that donations from, I don't know, around the world probably, certainly from the U.S., are being received by Chalice of Mercy and then being distributed, being brought to the places of greatest need, even to the front lines and to the military hospitals and to the wherever distribution centers are that are desperately needed. So it's very hard to communicate with her right now. Mm-hmm. She's so immersed in it, she's not super responsive to emails and such, but I totally understand why.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing is also that she has been thrust into a situation, and this is the interesting thing, is that some of these people in these parishes that you guys will be talking with, you know, have an idea to do something, and you never can tell what those seeds are going to grow.
Yeah.
When she was doing her original project, which she still did, she never in her wildest dreams thought there would be a war.
No, that's
true. But she
true.
Was in the right place at the right time with the right connections.
She was ready.
Yeah,
exactly.
She was ready. So there are people out there in parishes that want to do something. They see things around them. And again, you just don't always know how to go about doing it. Again, like me, if I was opening the book club. Mm-hmm. I honestly wouldn't know how to begin. I wouldn't even begin to understand.
And I think that one of the keys here is keep it simple and start simple. Don't try to do too much all at once, because then you'll just burn out and stop.
Yeah.
So do what's doable and keep it simple.
Last week, to change the subject a little bit, but last week I had Deacon Bob Zitlow on. And he was talking about the Rural Life Days, which has just passed. And we talked a lot about the family farm and the values, and we had another guest on as well. But then I remembered that I had known him before he was a deacon. And when he was doing radio sales, and actually he sold some ads for the show back when it was on a couple of commercial stations locally before it got picked up by the network. But I asked him basically, you know, how he got into it, and he said it was long time call. He had felt this, and he was fortunate that he was able to secure a job with a radio group where he did sales on his time schedule, not theirs, that allowed him to study. And he, you know, and again, I said to him, back in those early days when I first met you, and you were basically selling stuff, did you ever, if I told you you were going to be a deacon someday, what would you have said? And he said, well, you're out of your mind. He talked to me later in the show, and he said that he had some physical challenges. He had a very difficult time reading. And he finally figured out that there was something in his muscles in his eyes, and I didn't get the whole story from him, but it basically meant that if he stared at a sentence, the left eye would focus on one word and the right eye would focus on another.
That would make it hard.
And his mind could not coalesce the two.
Together.
And they didn't think that he would be able to go into the deacon program because you can't really read too well. And then he discovered an ophthalmologist or something somewhere. I think he actually heard it on relevant radio that changed his life. Yeah. This guy discovered.
He got vision therapy that retrained his eyes.
Yeah, because you have a son in
I that. Have a son in Houston, Texas, who does vision therapy. And it's precisely that kind of thing. It's not about getting prescriptions for your glasses, that the work that he does. It's about assessing difficulties with the eyes and what's going on with muscles, with depth perception, with different things. And then after the diagnosis comes the prescription of different exercises that you need to do in order to train your eyes to work properly with your brain to see. And most of us don't experience those difficulties, not to any large degree at least. And so it's like, wow, that's a thing? And yeah, it is.
Yeah, and it came close to stopping him from becoming a deacon. But yeah. he's really quite convinced that through the grace of God, he heard that broadcast and that got him on the track to...
How about that?
Yeah, which is, again, you sit back and you just smile. We're talking about that a little bit because this program has started up again. Can you give us a broad overview of what this all is about now?
Sure. So we just started the weekend of September 8th to the 10th. We had our first fall session of deacon and lay formation, and these two groups meet together. So what we have on the deacon formation side, actually, just to recall, we serve three dioceses in deacon formation: our own diocese, the Diocese of Madison, and the Diocese of Superior. Those other two dioceses send their guys to us for deacon formation. So we're kind of proud of that. And I think we, you know, it's one of those collaborative things too that, I mean, if everybody had to create their own program, you know, you're duplicating a lot of instruction and services. Every year, each of these three dioceses may have somewhere between 5 and 10 men who are want to apply to be formed to be deacons. And of course, they have to be vetted each by their own diocese, okay? But we don't do that part for the other diocese. Each man, they're going to have these deacons, right? It's going to be their deacons. So we want to be sure that the vetting is done by them. But once they're vetted and they're found to be, yes, this is someone we'd like to start the process of discernment in our five-year program of deacon formation, then we take them. And so we just had our first, we had this new class has 9 men from the Diocese of La Crosse. It has 8 from the Diocese of Madison and 6 from the Diocese of Superior. So that's 23. So 23 men in this new class of deacon, we call them aspirants. The first 2 years is aspirancy, then there's 3 years of candidacy. So it's really exciting. It's always just a lot of, I mean, there's a lot of that goes into the vetting process, the screening process, if you will. Letters of recommendation, recommendation from the pastor, just a lot of interviews. We want to do the best we can to be sure that we're not going to waste these men's time, and that their diocese is fully behind them, and that they're well suited to begin this process.
Now, for those who are not familiar with the whole idea of a deacon, this is the permanent diaconate.
Yes,
they are not moving on to
the priesthood, right?
And their function varies, but. What is their function in the hierarchy of...
Sure. So Holy Orders has 3 different, call it, levels, okay? There's deacon, priest, bishop, an ascending order, if you will. But all of them are ordained men. They're ordained. It's part of the sacrament of Holy Orders. But, and I think everybody's pretty familiar with what a bishop is and what a priest is. A deacon is an ordained member of the clergy, once again, but typically these are typically married men. They aren't necessarily married men, but they usually are. If they become a deacon and they're not married, then they cannot marry. So you can be a married man and become a deacon, but you can't become a deacon and then get married. People can study that more if they want and Google it and figure that out. But in any case, the deacon is a unique... So the history is that if we look at the Acts of the Apostles, the deacons were first ordained because the apostles said, look, we need to take care of preaching the gospel, but there are widows and orphans and there are communities that are... the widows are not being cared for. We need some to care for them and see that they get the distribution of food and care that they need. So the first deacons then were ordained. And so that's the backstory. There was a period of time where the diaconate was dormant or suppressed. But then after the Second Vatican Council, it came back. So not to give too long and boring a history lesson, but bottom line is the deacon is, the very word deacon means one who serves. Okay, diaconia is service. So the service of charity is at the heart of the diaconate. But they also have service at the altar. You'll see them preaching the gospel. They can celebrate baptisms. They can officiate at weddings. Those are the sacramental functions. They can certainly can do benediction, for example, as well. They can give blessings. A lay person typically is not able to give a blessing or to preach a homily. Deacons can preach homilies. They proclaim the gospel. So they have unique roles that are more on the side of the clerical or the clergy role. But they're typically, again, married. They typically have, if they're not of retirement age, they have jobs in the secular world. So they're kind of a bridge between the world of the laity and the world of the clergy. And that's a beautiful thing because there are ways that the deacon can relate to the average layperson, sometimes more easily than priests and bishops, because they've been immersed in that lay world, mm-hmm. Even though they're now clerics, they have. And I think what we see in our own diocese is more and more prominence. Bishop Callahan has been a tremendous supporter of the diaconate. And I think he's been really well served by our deacons as well. And I think he'd be the first to say that.
Yeah, Bob Zitlow is a liaison between the Rural Life Committee and the deacon. And
yes.
He was born and raised on a farm.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what better person would you
exactly.
have?
Exactly. No,
that
Deacon
kind of
Bob
thing.
Zitlow is. And we have, we've had deacons in very. Deacon Richard Sage was the director of Catholic Charities mm-hmm. for a good while. We have right now, there's an office for the diaconate now, which handles the deacons, particularly after ordination, their ongoing formation and just taking care that their needs are met and that they're. You know, that they're fulfilling also their responsibilities, that they're having a good relationship in the parish with their pastor, with the people in the community. And Deacon Deacon Bob Riedel, is currently the director of the Office for the Diaconate. And he's doing a terrific job. He just took that position. Deacon Brian Hiltz had been just months ago. He left that position because he took on another role with Catholic education. But Deacon, so we have deacons that serve in many ways, and some end up. We have deacons that teach in our program. Deacon David Allen, who's at Blessed Sacrament Parish in La Crosse. He teaches the human formation classes in our formation program. Deacon Ned Wilcomb does a lot of mentoring. He's the prefect for diaconal life and ministry, we call him, fancy title. But he's part of our formation. Deacon Jerry Rinda is the coordinator of pastoral field education, helping the men to get experience during their formation time, experience of what it is to do ministry in a parish in various capacities. So we've had deacons in very important roles, and they've done a terrific job.
I remember years ago, we had some terrific rainfall storms here, and there were mudslides, and, you know, quite seriously. And I remember someone saying, yeah, there was, before FEMA got there, there was Deacon Richard Sage out there with a prayer card in one hand and a gift card in the other, helping out people whose homes had been inundated by the storm. And that's always the image of him I have fixed yeah. in my brain whenever you mention his name.
Well, this is the at the heart of the diaconate again is service. I'd be remiss, I need to mention as well, the director of our formation program, our five-year program, is Father William Felix. And it's a good number of years now that he's been in that position. He's a tremendous director. Mm-hmm. He really, you might think that a priest would automatically understand the diaconate, but not all priests do. Sometimes, especially for our international priests, it's challenging because they come from countries where they don't have the mm-hmm. permanent diaconate actively going on. And so, but Father Felix has a great understanding of the diaconate, a great appreciation, and he directs our formation. I assist him as assistant director, but he's a director, and his insights and his sort of strategic vision have been really powerful and shaped the program in profound ways. So we have great debt of gratitude to him for, besides being a pastor, taking on that role of director of deacon formation.
Yeah. How long is the program and how often do they meet?
Yeah, the program is a five-year program, 2 years of aspirancy. We call it that because aspiring, basically, those are the years especially dedicated to discernment. Is God really calling me to this? Because we believe that it's a vocation, like the priesthood, like marriage. You're called to it by God. Is this God's call for me? So those 2 years of aspirancy are particularly focused on discernment. Now, those 2 years are very much interwoven with our lay formation program. They share a lot of the core courses for the aspirancy 2 years, and our lay formation program is 2 years as well. And they focus on core courses, especially from the catechism, the profession of faith, the moral life, Christian prayer, liturgy, the sacraments. So those pillars, the four pillars of the catechism, are a prime focus, and they're shared. They share those courses and a few others. Although they have their own sessions besides. And then it moves on from there to candidacy, where it's completely in the diaconal track. They're not shared with lay formation. They're specifically diaconal, and that's 3 years. And it's still discernment. You can discern, and we discern, the program discerns for the men too, for the full 5 years, but especially those first 2 years are kind of categorized that way.
And also, these deacons serve every day in parishes.
They do.
And they take some of the load off the parish priest.
That is a huge part of what they do is assist the priest, whether it's home visits, hospital visits, liturgy of the word. Sometimes maybe if there's not a mass during the week, the deacon can celebrate liturgy of the word with communion, adoration, exposition and benediction, baptisms, weddings. The deacon can assist in many ways, and they certainly do.
And only a couple of things are reserved for the priesthood.
Confession being confession one, anointing of the sick being another.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
And the deacon cannot consecrate the host, but they can serve it, basically.
Well, what they do, basically, yes, only the priest can confect the Eucharist. Only the priest can do that, can celebrate Mass. The deacon cannot celebrate Mass. But they proclaim the gospel and they assist at the altar. So they will. You'll notice probably one of the most photographed moments in the life of a deacon is raising the chalice at the elevation after consecration, when just before the great Amen, the sacred host and the chalice are held up, are elevated, and the priest elevates the consecrated host and the deacon the chalice in that moment. And that's kind of a classic image. Yeah. But the deacon is helping to set the altar, is helping in a number of ways around the altar as well as proclaiming the gospel and possibly preaching the homily.
Right. Now, obviously, this five-year program has just begun.
Right. And because every 2 years.
Every 2 years, okay.
There's a new class every 2 years.
And so at this point, if someone was hearing about this, they would have to be, of course, first, they would have to apply, and then they have to be approved.
Yeah.
And then they would start 2 years from now.
Yeah, and they wouldn't be approved right away. The first step would be they would get in touch with Deacon Bob Riedel, mm-hmm. Director of the Office for the Diaconate. So he's the gatekeeper, if you will, to use a kind of an odd expression. But he basically is the person that you would first approach if you're interested. Well, you first approach your own pastor.
Ah, good idea.
That's what you should do first of all. And express your interest to your pastor that you're thinking maybe God's calling you to be a deacon. And then if your pastor is thinking, this could be, then you'd be approaching Deacon Bob Riedel, and he would have some initial conversation with the man and possibly then at that point share an application that the man would fill out. And then, then there'd be a whole vetting process. The discernment retreat. Every year we have a discernment retreat that gives the flavor of what deacon formation is like. They actually come to a deacon formation weekend and experience that and have some time of gathering for those who are attending the retreat to talk about it and reflect on it and meet with some of the deacons who are currently ordained. So it's kind of a hybrid thing that partly they're experiencing the weekend, partly they're having their own little time. But at least they come away then, and we ask the wives to come as well. They have a sense, okay, so this is what this would be if I'm accepted into the program and I feel that God is calling me. So there's the discernment, and we don't have the date set yet for the next one, but the next actual class would start in the fall of 25.
Okay. Do you have any feeling on the average age of a person who is applying for this?
Yeah, I would say we get some, you need to be at least 35 at the point of ordination. Mm. Okay, at the point of ordination, you need to be at least 35. So in theory, a 30-year-old could apply.
Right.
Because it's 5 years of formation. Typically, we don't see them that young. But I would say late 30s to late 50s, even to like 60. We want men to be no older than 65 at the point of ordination. So they'd have to apply by age 60. There have been a few exceptions. The bishop can grant exceptions, but he doesn't grant them often, but he can. So basically, the age range for applying would be at a minimum age 30 to at a maximum age 60. But I would say your average age range would be probably somewhere between 40 and 60.
Okay, I'm just curious.
Yeah.
It's interesting also.
Some have children, you know, at home still.
Yeah.
But we very, you know, we say, you know, think hard about that. Is this doable for you in your circumstances?
It is a demanding thing. I mean, it basically is, as you say, a vocation.
Yeah.
And it a vocation that will use up quite a bit of your time, and that's why you want to be very careful about it. It is interesting that in this time where in mostly secular media, you just keep hearing about all these people who are leaving church in general, and, you know, who are nuns, N-O-N-E-S, that we have a sizable number of seminarians, a sizable number of people going through the deacon program, and also, you know, those in the pre-seminary thing.
Yeah.
It's a lot of interest in something that they're claiming everyone is running away from, I must
say. Well, the Holy Spirit is very much at work, and I think we've always seen this in the life of the church. There can be really dark times or times of real confusion in the life of the church, but sometimes the Holy Spirit shines brightest in those moments, and you'll see people, men and women, coming forward, just loving Christ, loving their faith. And there's just a lot of ways to encounter that now, too. With, you think of the Focus missionary program on college campuses, that has been revolutionary. That has touched so many lives, and is the source of a lot of vocations to the priesthood and religious life as well. So, but speaking of which, one of our recently ordained deacons, Deacon Terry Bell, who was assigned to Mary Mother of the Church, was the director of the Focus missionaries at UW La Crosse for a number of years, and is still involved with the Focus program, but at the parish level. It's a sort of an interesting branching out of Focus beyond just the college campus to actual parish life. And Deacon Terry Bell is doing some really great things at Mary Mother of the Church. And yeah, you see the Holy Spirit moving hearts and minds in powerful ways. And we can get discouraged by the popular culture, but you're right. We have to see, you know, we have men coming forward for seminary. We have young women coming forward for religious life. It's the Holy Spirit's at work.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that, you know, in some of the countries, they don't have the deacon program. Do you have any idea as to the ethnic mix? For example, are there any Hispanic deacons?
Ah, good question.
Or Hmong deacons?
Good question. We would very much like to see that in our diocese. There are certainly around the country, there are, particularly in those parts of the country like Arizona and Texas and Florida, where you see a lot more. You know, we anticipate that we will see men from the Hispanic community coming forward to go through the deacon. We've had some feelers that have come our way. We feel like it's just about at the door that we're going to see that. We have a man right now from the Diocese of Madison who's just starting out in our program, who is Hispanic. You know, sometimes the challenge is language.
Yeah.
So, you know, this particular man is a wonderful, he's such a dear person. I think the language will be, he speaks English, but it's not his first language. So we're going to try to give all the support that's needed for that.
Sure.
Maybe some extra support. And I would say the same will be true for the Hmong community. We would expect that we will see some men coming forward from the Hmong community. We haven't yet, but I feel like that day is nearing.
Well, the thing is, as a generation or two generations comes up and they're more familiar with the style of America, suddenly, you know, it suddenly becomes much easier for them to imagine being a deacon because they've seen them and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a question, you never can tell when a call is going to come from somebody who just...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well,
that'd be nice to talk to the first Hispanic deacon or first Hmong deacon. Would be really, what a wonderful thing that would be for their communities.
Yes, indeed. And I think that's something we're keenly aware of, that we would jump at the opportunity to have a good qualified candidate come forward from who can manage. Right now, we just can't do a Spanish-speaking formation program. We just don't have the resources to do that.
Sure.
Or certainly, all the more so with Hmong.
Yeah.
So they'd have to have the ability to handle the English. And, you know, and this is... You know, this is a certain topics that get covered that, you know, you want to understand what you're hearing.
Yeah, well, it could be second or third generation before this really comes to fruition in that particular regard. Interesting idea. Now, we don't really have time in this show to talk about the lay formation ministry. That we'll have to save for another show.
I could say a quick word.
Oh, yeah, you can give us a thumbnail.
I would just say that the Lay Formation Institute is one of my great joys. It's a two-year program. It meets the same weekends as Deacon Formation. So there's a beautiful synergy between those communities. It's typically the first weekend. It's a Friday evening into Saturday late afternoon, well, early evening, once a month for 9 months, September through May, for 2 years. It's a great joy. This is for people that want to go deeper in their faith and feel like that they want to bring the fruit of that to their families, to their parishes. And typically the pastor of a parish will sponsor people in our lay formation program. That's the usual thing. We'll sponsor the cost. And with the understanding that this is a person who is going to be enriched and be able then to be leavened in the parish, be able to be a witness, and whether they're going to be a catechist in the religious ed program, or whether they're going to help with marriage preparation, or whatever it might, just be in the choir, or lector, or communion, whatever it is, they will have a more profound level of faith and love of Christ. It's a beautiful two-year experience. It builds an incredible community, and these people go back to their parishes really very enriched.
Well, Chris, thank you so much. I want to, you guys do so much stuff, and I think that your collaboration now, working with getting people out in the parishes more physically in contact with your department.
Well, I think thank you for having me and Karen.
Yeah.
And I think that having Karen assisting the office, being out in the field, bringing that love of service that she has, that contagious spirit that she has, and the wealth of experience and ideas that she's built up, and her connection with Catholic Charities, is just a tremendous benefit. And I really look forward to her, the fruits of this from connecting with parishes and deaneries and just helping to support and encourage social ministry in our parishes.
And I'm sure we're going to see the fruits of that blossoming as well. And you might be surprised how quickly.
Yes.
She is definitely
well, but at the same time, you know, I think it requires patience. You'd like to think that everyone would just immediately jump right in and do social ministry, but you know, people are busy. So, but it's fertilizing the soil, it's tilling, it's a process, and you do it, and you do it with faith, and you do it with hope and optimism.
I mentioned in a previous show with the bishop how we too tend to expect things to happen too quickly.
I said, sometimes.
I said, we were raised on Alka-Seltzer commercials for like plop, plop, fizz, fizz, oh, what a relief it is. And we seem to think that this stuff can be plop, plop, here comes Karen, bang, bang, it's done.
Well, she will. I have utter confidence in what she's going to be able to do to help this process. But at the same time, I think it's going to be a strategic process, and with a lot of connecting with people and making maybe a second phone call or a third phone call or email or whatever. And that's just how it is.
That's just how
and
it
she's
is.
She's good with that too.
Yeah, but I'm sure your confidence is well founded.
It's really well founded.
Chris Ruff, the director from the Office for Ministries and Social Concerns, has been our guest, along with Karen Becker. And again, as I always say, if anything urgent comes up, you want to get the word out. If you call me like on a Tuesday to say, can you mention this? I can have it on the air that coming weekend. So we'll give that a shot anytime you want. I'm sure this will be happening. Chris, thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you, Jack. Appreciate it.
Well, I was a little bit puzzled over the fact that I did not know about any name change for the Rite of Christian Initiation for Adults, or RCIA. So, of course, what did I do? Hey, we've got this new thing called the Internet. Welcome to 1998, Jack. Basically, what was going on and what is going on is that the Rite of Christian Initiation for Adults, or RCIA, as it has been more commonly referred to, will have its name changed to Order of Christian Initiation for Adults, or OCIA, following the trend of updating all liturgical texts to reflect greater fidelity to the original Latin. The U.S. bishops, back on November of 2021, revised the English edition of the Order of Christian Initiation of Adults. The report says the action still needs the approval of the Vatican's Congregation for Divine Worship and the Discipline of the Sacraments before it takes effect. And that's as far as I got. So, that's okay. I don't think we have to, stay awake at night worrying about this, but the change will be coming, and if you hear the terms OCIA, that means what we used to know as RCIA. We'll be back after this with Bohr. I'd connect you to the diocese.
Catholic News and Interviews. This is Connecting the Diocese.
Well, on a much more serious topic than the changing of names for RCIA to OCIA is, as you probably have been hearing in the news, there have been two tragedies quite a ways away. First in Morocco, where they had the terrible earthquakes, and now in Libya, where they had these amazing flash floods, 10,000 people missing. Unfortunately, so many bodies piling up. They're finding them. They're having trouble trying to figure out what they can do about it. Why am I telling you this? Well, of course, number one, give them, please, your prayers. Number two, whenever something tragic like this happens, there is the automatic feeling that you should do something to help. And maybe it involves contributing some money to some organization who's going to be there. Well, things are doubly difficult right now because these are predominantly non-Christian nations, and so they do resist getting help from church organizations and things like that. There's political stuff going on as well. But what's more important is that you may be getting all kinds of appeals to help the people in Morocco, help the people in Libya. You have to be super, super careful that your money is actually going to go to places that will actually get the job done, and not into the pockets of some marketing agency, or worse yet, somebody who's just scamming you and is just keeping the money to themselves. Normally, I would say, go to some church-related organization. And at this point, I honestly don't know if Catholic Relief Services is working in those countries for reasons we just described. You might want to check with the Red Crescent, which is the Muslim version of the Red Cross, and just go to Charity Watch or one of those places and do a little research as to how you can help. Just be careful that you do some research so you can make whatever donation you do really, really count. Jack Socia with you, doing the final few minutes of Connecting the Diocese. I'm going to leave you with some actual excerpts from this very show that I'm saving for future use as well. It just struck me when I heard them put together that this is what caring sounds like. It's hard work and it's organization, but it's caring. So I'll give you that to ponder, and I'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Social concerns, one of the core parts of our faith. We have been directed by Jesus Christ, Matthew 25, to make sure that we do take care of our fellow man, that we are there taking care of him, feeding the hungry. And so as we know our faith and practice our faith, it's important to put your faith in action and find some way to take care or to give back, because that's who we're called to be.
We're all in conversation. We all want to see how can we be the heart and hands of Jesus Christ for our neighbor in need. What are the needs? What are the different resources available? Who's doing what? But there has to be this networking and communication. People need to see other people. and feel like I'm being encouraged, this is possible. When you do that with others, when you do that in a community way, whether it's the parish or it's a group of parishes working together, the joy is multiplied. It's deeper and the fruits are stronger because, you know, you have more hands and hearts working together.